Good afternoon. Welcome to the SD Denure Show. My name is Barbara Wythe, and I am actually the first guest this afternoon on a very important show that SD has chosen to do about the new mining bill that just got passed into law. And SD is running a little bit late, but I thought I would open the show. I am a resident of Madeline Island, La Pointe, Wisconsin, and I come from the very heart of what would be affected by the implementation of a mountaintop removal open pit iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin on the shores of Lake Superior. So I come here today with a lot of information that I'd like to give you and hopefully inspire you to help stand up for this, the situation that we're dealing with. And I'm just so glad that people like SD are devoting some airtime to it. It's a complicated situation that needs a lot of attention. Hey, SD.
Hi, Barb. Thank you for starting this for me. I should share with my listeners that I lost count of the time and got here a little late. We are going to have with us in a few minutes also Mike Wiggins, who is the chairman of the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa, and also Kelly Westland, who is an Ashland council member. And we will be talking, as Barb said, about the passage of the mining bill, which is now the mining law, and about what's coming next. So what have you said so far, Barb?
I just opened up the discussion about this new mining law has so many implications.
Yes.
Beyond the Pinokies.
So did you mention that you're from Madeline Island?
Yes.
Okay. So how would, if there were a mine there in the Pinokies, how would it affect your area? How would it affect Madeline Island and the whole area of Lake Superior?
Well, economically, it would be detrimental to several other industries that we rely on and that we're proud of. One, of course, is tourism. You come up there. If you haven't been up there, we want you to come up, make it the summer of Superior, come and support us. It is one of the most beautiful places on the planet, not just Wisconsin. So the tourism of going from these beautiful, pristine hills and Copper Falls destroyed, the agriculture. We have a very growing agricultural sector in our economy, organic farming, lots of small farms coming up. There's farms right in the shadow of the mine that will be covered with dust. And the byproduct of it, not to mention the noise pollution, the sound pollution, the degradation of the environment. I don't see much good coming from it, and I don't see any ability to blend it into our sustainable economies up there, mining. It's not meant to. The people who put this mine in don't care about its effect upon the community. If they did, they would listen to the community. And Kelly, I'm sure, will be able to address that as the elected officials.
Yeah. Well, as you were watching the bill come into being and eventually becoming a law, what did you think of the democratic process? Just how democratically did it happen? And do you have concerns in that way? If so, what are they?
It was not a democratic process. In fact, I use the word fascism as a very concrete definition of when a corporation takes over the state and takes over the resources. And from the start, the bill was written by the corporation. We were lied to, straight out lied to. They told us when they came to talk to our communities, they said, we're not going to change we don't need to change any legislation. We have this clean way to do iron ore. And what they didn't tell us was, at the time they were telling us they weren't going to change the legislation, they were writing the bill. And I think that speaks a lot just to the process. But all the hearings through the whole process of the past 2 years, overwhelmingly against public sentiment against this bill. And the longer it goes on, the more people are against it. You will find very few people, once they find out what really is going on, to stand in support of this bill. All along the way, the process was hijacked. And now that they've signed it into law, it takes it one more frightening step closer to losing something that will never be able to be replaced.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
The natural resources of the area, putting the mine directly in the headwaters of our watershed. That will never be able to be replaced.
Right. And we have with us now on the phone Mike Wiggins, the chairman of the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa. And hello, Mike. Thank you for joining us again.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me to be on the show.
Absolutely. And Kelly Westland also, who is a council member of Ashland. And again, in the studio here with us, we have Barbara Wythe, who is a journalist and resident of Madeline Island. And Kelly, hello to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Mike, let's get to you next. As you may remember, and as listeners may remember, really the first time that people in Madison learned about the proposed mine at the time was on this show. You know, I was going to check when that was, but forgot. So it was probably a year and a half or 2 years ago, and a lot has changed then. The bill has become law, and I have heard you talking, of course, on that radio show at the time, but also since then a number of times, and you are a low-key, understated person, generally speaking, but you have said more than once that you see the passage of the bill as a genocidal act. That is a strong word. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, it's quite simply a testament to the history of extractive industry, open pit mining, and the environmental impacts that come with those types of industries. For our situation here in Bad River, because our waterways are connected directly to the footprint area of that mountaintop removal, the release of heavy metals like arsenic, lead, arsenic and lead, the release of mercury, the release of sulfate pollution that has been proven to decimate wild rice crops, and the contamination of a groundwater aquifer that our nation depends on, all spell and point in a direction to human health impacts. When you start thinking about toxicity and poisoning through the filter of water and hydrological considerations and the loss of traditional foods and things like that, we start seeing infringements on basic human rights. We start seeing infringements on things like the ability of a nation to be self-determinant. And ultimately, when you look at it through the perspective of babies in the future that may have to ingest things that are toxified on account of this company's effort to profit, we can see that our people stand to be harmed. And when you think about mercury pollution and its attacks on the cognitive processing of children and how that steals the ability to think, you know, notions of genocide start manifesting themselves. The other thing is, just from a food production standpoint, we could take wild rice and look at it as a sacred food and all of our cultural connections that are ancient. But we can also look at it through a medicinal perspective and see it as a slow-burning carb, as a grain that is a slow-burning carb that actually helps stabilize and regulate blood sugar. And when you apply that to a community, you know, our Native American community that has disproportionately high rates of things like diabetes, there is all of a sudden a traditional medicinal kind of perspective that cuts directly to the ability to live a good life and the ability to live a longer life. We get into these kind of tangents where all of a sudden we're talking about the fact that the body is only going to produce so much insulin, and that sustaining that through the traditional foods that help stabilize and keep blood sugars low prolongs life. We could go into those kinds of tangents and start putting some tangibility to the notions of genocide. And the last thing I'd say about that is that, and I've said this before, is that human beings are 70 to 75% water. That water is not random. People are comprised of the groundwater aquifers and the municipal water systems that they ingest. People in Madison are 70% water as organisms moving around through the city. That water is from the Madison municipal water supply. That's not random. Up here in Bad River, Bad River people are walking around 70% water as an organism from the groundwater aquifers that have their recharge station right in the footprint of the open pit mine. And when you think about that physiological reality, genocide becomes very real and becomes a huge concern. And again, when you reference that all back to the new mining law and to the giveaway that mining company got in the form of being able to pollute, fill in, and destroy wetlands, lakes, streams, this is real. And that's where our response is essentially centered in defense and protection of our watershed and ultimately our lives.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get back to some of the points that you made, but I just want to make a point that, whereas you're right that we are made of the water that is in our vicinity, is in our environment, water also does not stay in one place. The water that you have eventually will get elsewhere. Do you think that people, if you think only in very selfish terms, the water that I drink, the water that my kids drink, should I care if I'm in Madison? Should I care if I'm in Minnesota? Should I care if I'm wherever?
Well, I think, you know, the some of the umbrella considerations that kind of sit over the top of the whole issue are, should we care about our neighbors? Should we care about each other as human beings? And how do we treat each other? These are questions on a scale and on a level of humanity. And really, there's other issues at stake here. And the fact is, you know, the 40%, the wetlands of our area in our home that in the Bad River watershed that are downstream from this project comprise 40% of the wetlands on Lake Superior. Lake Superior, as we all know, is the brightest gem of the Great Lakes and one of the brightest gems in the world. That 40% of the wetlands on Lake Superior is critical habitat for all endangered species and all kinds of flora and fauna. But it's also an unbelievably important element for the health and sustainability of Lake Superior. And, you know, there's considerations that way. How are we going to take care of our home? Do we plan on being as expendable and as throwaway, as you know, in terms of being human beings, as the practices of consumption that we have? You know, no. Nobody is planning to go away. All societies, all people are planning to be around for another 1,000 years, another 2,000 years. Let's be real, forever. So the notions of destroying and obliterating headwaters of ecosystems that are becoming more and more rare in the world are things that we need to think about no matter where we live, because essentially this is our home, and for the people, the good people in the state of Wisconsin, our areas up north here are something that everybody can be proud of, and something that you know, ultimately makes this state and for us and our tribe very proud of our home.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly Westland, you are a council member in Ashland, and the city council there unanimously adopted a resolution opposing many of the provisions of the mining law. Tell us, please, first of all, why and how did it come to be unanimous, which is quite unusual, and about some of these provisions that you all object to.
Well, when we first started talking about potentially passing something, a lot of people asked us, you know, what's the point? It's not like you're going to outweigh or overrule the state legislature. But I think the point was for us to take that opportunity to articulate the things, the kinds of assurances that we would need for anybody here to even, you know, consider being okay with this. And a lot of the things that we used in that resolution were actually drawn from some of the principles that were outlined, I think, over a year ago by the Bad River folks. And I guess that one thing I just wanted to add to some of the things that Mike was saying was that, you know, this law, it applies to every community in this state. And we've been talking a lot about the communities up here in particular because we're looking at this specific mining project, but that law is now the law that applies everywhere. Every community has water that's at risk. We're not the only ones. And when we put together this resolution, we were kind of looking at some of the biggest flaws in the legislation that was about to be signed into law by Governor Walker. And, you know, our council is divided. There are people here who are in support of the mine. There are people here who, you know, are willing to do it if it's done in a responsible way. And I would say that the vast majority are opposed to it. But if we are going to have to deal with new legislation, we wanted to try to at least articulate the things that would make it a little bit less awful, I guess. When we were talking about this resolution, we held a special meeting, and we had it open for public comments, and we had only, I think, one person spoke in favor of a mining project here, and everybody else was opposed, but I think it actually came down to the discussion about the Legislative Fiscal Bureau's analysis, where they had discussed the changes to how the taxation on mines would be done and the fact that the state was going to be losing out on over $170 million a year because of this legislation, if this mine should go into effect. And, you know, that's a real concern for communities, especially in rural areas or in this part of the state, specifically because this project. Right now, under that legislation, mines are only taxed based on the profits that they can show. If this is going to be a $1.5 billion investment or a $2 billion investment, how long is it going to take for them to turn a profit on that? I mean, it could be over a decade before any of the communities that are directly affected start to see any revenues to help us with the things that we need to manage that would accommodate a project of the size or the influx of population, whether it's, you know, for infrastructure or for schools or emergency services. This is something that could bankrupt us long before we ever see any kind of return.
Mm-hmm. Is that the $170 million, or are there other ways in which we'll be losing money?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just the taxation piece. I know that they've talked a lot about how they wanted to mimic the regulations in Minnesota and Michigan. Both of them have, their laws are based on a gross tonnage. So for every amount of ore that comes out of that iron mine, that's taxed. I mean, companies have, you know, a lot of ways of hiding, you know, profits that they don't have to pay taxes, and why should we think this company would be any different? But other than that, and I know that Mike and Barbara have both spoken to this a little bit, we have some really great and growing opportunities in this region that are very dependent on clean water, and a lot of that has to do with agriculture specifically. Mm-hmm. I don't think that when they paid North Star to do their economic study, that they took into account the other options that they would be taking out of the mix if they decided to push this mine through.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. I heard you in one of the testimonies in front of the legislature talking about this thriving or really developing economy of organic agriculture. I did not know that about Ashland. I love Ashland and the area, but I didn't know that this was part of what's going on there. Tell us about it.
It's really exciting. You know, for a long time, people up here have been having these conversations about how do we reinvest in ourselves? How do we make our communities more self-reliant? And we've been looking at closing some of those loops in terms of, you know, whether it's distributed renewable energy or whether it's local agriculture. And it's becoming very clear that being able to feed people locally is just going to get more and more important as we move into the future. And we have a lot of small sort of diversified family farms, and there's a wide variety. Some of them are organic, some of them are not. Some of them are relatively new farmers just getting into the business, and some of them are century farms that are fourth and fifth generations. But in the last, I would say, 5 years or so, they've really started to coordinate with each other and work together to kind of figure out where the gaps are and how to fill those in. And one of the organizations up here in particular that is a partnership of 18 different farms and food producers has been exporting food from the region. And this year already they've doubled the amount of revenue they generated in the first 2 months of this year as they did in all of last year. So it's obviously something with a lot of growth potential, and the only thing that's really holding us back right now is that we can't keep up with the demand for local food. We need more people growing vegetables. And you can't do that if the water is bad.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, what do we know about the company that wants to do this mine? What do we know about their track record? What can we expect from them if they get to have this mine?
Well, GTAC is the local arm of a bigger company owned by Chris Klein, who is Florida-based. Klein is a coal miner, and right now he's in a lot of difficulty in Illinois with the people down there. He's doing longwall mining underneath farm fields, and there's a quite a big push down there to get him to be accountable for the damage that's being done down there. Many of us, though, feel as if GTAC is... there's something more beneath this than just mining. The mine itself has been passed over many times, or several times, by bigger mining companies in the past because it wasn't really a viable vein of ore. There's a far more viable vein of ore in Baraboo. Why aren't they focusing on that?
Why?
Well, I believe it's the water, because we're sitting on what, you know, some of us up north who went up there to get away from the world, and we were realizing we are in the crosshairs of an international war that will erupt over water as things get worse. So, but GTAC itself doesn't seem to have any other history other than to come into our area and do what they're doing. Bill Williams apparently had managed some mines in other parts of the world that were also... not very good environmentally. I don't have all of those facts and figures on hand, but I don't believe there's very many of us who really trust them to care about what they're doing to us.
So they haven't done mountaintop removal mining before?
They've done mountaintop removal. Klein has done mountaintop removal for coal.
Uh-huh, but not for iron ore.
But they've never mined for iron ore.
Uh-huh.
And Klein himself is part of a bigger sort of industrial war complex, Foresight, a lot of manufacturing for the war industry as well.
Uh-huh. So, And from what I hear, this iron ore is mainly going to go to China so that they can have more cars there, so that we can have more pollution. Is that? Do you know about that?
We've been talking about the Chinese corporations being able to come in and possibly buy larger tracts of land under a new rule or law that they're trying to undo now. But honestly, I don't think there's so much secrecy and there's so much misinformation and there's not a lot of history on GTAC. And so we speculate. What I always say is that they'll take it out and they'll ship it overseas to somebody who'll make it into guns and sell it to somebody else who will then use it against us, or sell it back to us and we'll sell it to someone who use against us. There's a lot of unsavory influences in this whole stinky deal.
Mm-hmm. GTAC, of course, being Gogebic Taconite.
Yes.
That's the full name of the company. Mike, you were talking about looking at the pollution and the consequences from the perspective of babies, and then when I tried to get you to talk to people's potential selfish way of thinking, you still talked about caring for each other, and it seems to me like neither of these things are enshrined in the ideology of capitalism, which is, I think, what we're looking at. Capitalism in its glory, if you like, or in its lowest possibilities, as we look at the collaboration that currently exists between government and capital, basically, in Wisconsin. I wonder if you have given thought to how it is possible to help people see things in a different ways, to change the language, to change the way people understand what is really important, so that there's more of an ability to look at the things that you're talking about versus whatever. I mean, to me, actually, the whole rhetoric doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because we're giving a lot of money to a company that will come and go and make a lot of money. Other than the talk of jobs, nobody's talking about it doing anything good to the state. So, sorry, I'm giving a little speech here, but...
Well, I have some thoughts, and really, I think, you know, part of our message has been to talk about the things that we need to live, right? And those basic human rights, clean air, clean water. The public trust doctrine of Wisconsin sits there as a shining example that water is everybody's resource. Every person, whether no matter what walk of life they come from, and is entitled to that, and a lot of our waterways were under that umbrella. When you start applying, I guess, like you said, capitalism, notions of money, and corporate efforts start intruding into the realm of the commons, that's something that every person should be concerned about. It's not as though it's a business investment that's made to under the radar of communities and what have you, and in some kind of specific tangent for another company or a service or something like that. This is an intrusion into the very life-giving realm of ecosystems that cities, that small towns, that human beings, and every other living entity in this world depend on. And if we're going to sacrifice ecosystems and watersheds for a mining company's profit, and that mining company's profit is projected in terms of 15 to 25 years, but the giveaway of the ecosystem is permanent, forever, perpetual, into perpetuity, forever, you can see that the trade-off is absurd and really rather insane. And the thought process is, like I've heard Bill Williams say, is we run into a problem, we'll engineer our way out of it. The problem is the obliteration of the headwaters of a watershed and the fact that that won't come back. And Bill Williams, the president of GTAC, was also involved in the White Pine Mine, where apparently... dumping hundreds of thousands of gallons of sulfuric acid down into the earth had been justified as okay to remove raw minerals. I always keep that perspective in mind when I hear Bill Williams talking about how they're going to recreate the circle of life here by destroying a watershed. It's really just kind of about breaking through the verbal constructs that extractive industry want us to talk in. And they want us to talk in terms of money and jobs, because the reality is the parallel language that comes with extractive industry are words like forever, perpetual maintenance, you know, things like that. There's the reason Wisconsin has a prove it first law, the reason Gaylord Nelson and Wisconsin forefathers and people like Sigurd Olson, who had their roots in Wisconsin, are remembered, is because they understood that the catastrophic destruction of our ecosystems around us were not good for anyone's notions of economic development in a sustainable way, especially when, again, we tack those notions of perpetuity onto them. Our ecosystems are the wealth that you know, have kept what are essentially rural communities up north in the woods here alive and thriving. The Big Lake, waterways, those forests, all of that stuff is what has sustained us forever to this point, and will sustain us forever from this point. So, you know, it's interesting times, and when you look at the government and a particular mining company collaborating, and the fact that a mining company got to write their own law, it's also very, very dangerous times, and these are intrusions into the human rights of all of us, mm-hmm. for profit.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly, what do you say to that mantra of jobs, jobs, jobs? You've already said that in Ashland, when you had the hearings, only one person testified in favor of this bill, but from what I know, there's the town Hurley is by and large supportive of the law. I keep wanting to say bill, but the law, because of the jobs that presumably will be created. So first of all, about Hurley and whether I'm even right about this this statement. If so, why? What's the historical or the social or the economic reason for that? And what do you think about how many jobs will be created? What kind of jobs will they be? And are they worth the destruction of all these organic farms, for example?
Well, you know, I think that all of the jobs numbers that have been sort of really casually thrown around came out of that original and deeply, deeply flawed economic study that was funded by Go Gibbick Taconite. So, first of all, we can't even trust the numbers that they've been throwing around. But secondly, again, going back to some of the opportunities that we have here, you know, maybe we need jobs. We can use jobs, but we don't need mining jobs. Now, the folks in Hurley, you know, there was a history of iron mining here to some extent, but it was a very, very different kind of mining. It was shaft mining. It was something that was not quite as destructive to the surface of the land, and a lot of people still have this sort of nostalgic, you know, generations-long memory of what it was like when their grandparents worked in the mine, or, you know, they have these historical sites and things around Hurley in that area where people can think about, you know, a more prosperous time. But the facts are that mining has changed dramatically. This is a very different kind of mine. And the people that live here now don't have the skill sets to be able to even work in this mine if it were to actually to come to pass. You know, this bill or this law now, in the end, didn't include any sort of funding for training people who live here. So if they're going to bring this mining company in, chances are very good that they're going to bring in people with technical expertise from outside of the state. Well, then they say, but don't worry, that's going to trickle down to service industry, which is what we have right now with tourism, and that they're telling us isn't good enough. So there's this disconnect between You know, these people that say that they want their kids to come back here to have something to look forward to have a reason not to leave to begin with. And, you know, the reality of what this mine would be, study after study shows that when rural communities have a big extractive industry like this come in, that we're typically left worse off once they go than we were before they started. And I guess one of the frustrations in terms of this, you know, this disagreement between the majority of Ashland and the majority of folks in Hurley is that, you know, we should try to be better neighbors. And the folks in Hurley, I don't know. The media throughout the state of Wisconsin and the Google Big Tech Night have been really painting all of us up here as being so poor and so desperate and so in need of so many things. And first, I would say that that's just not true. We actually have a really fantastic quality of life. I get to look at Lake Superior every day. I get to eat good local food. I get to work independently. I get to do things that I care about that matter to me, and I get to know my neighbors. And when the folks in Hurley are looking for these other options, I really have only lately tried to start reaching out and saying, you know, we've got some pretty good things going on here, and I think that you folks should try to be a part of it. If you look at the relief maps, I guess this is kind of a different tangent, but if you look at the way that the ridge is actually shaped, you'll see that the city of Ashland and Bad River and more of Ashland County is sitting in that basin. We are the ones that are all downstream. All of the negative impacts that could come from this project are going to directly affect us. The folks in Hurley are a little bit higher elevation. They're outside of that basin. The water that could be at risk isn't their water. They're outside of that. They have everything to gain and nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we both have very, very different motivations in terms of addressing this. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it goes back to what Mike was saying about, you know, being neighbors and caring about each other once again.
Yeah. Well, let me reintroduce my guests. Yeah, the woman you just heard is Kelly Westland. She's a member of the Ashland Council member. Before that, you heard Mike Wiggins, who is the chairman of the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa. And with me in the studio is Barbara Wythe, who is actually from Madeline Island. She's a journalist, and she is here today. So, Barb, the media was mentioned, and what a poor job they've done of describing the people up north as all poor and miserable and jobless. Do you want to talk in larger terms about the media and what kind of coverage it has given us? You yourself are a member of the, let's see if I can remember, Wisconsin Citizens Media Cooperative.
Yes,
WCMCoop.com,
yes.
I think. What? How have you been impressed with the local media, the national media, the mainstream media? What kind of job have they been doing?
I would say probably 90% of the mainstream media is either incompetent on this issue. They tend to have this idea that being journalists, that they just have to, here we're going to report what GTAC says, and now we're going to report what Mike Wiggins says, and they leave it at that. They don't go into trying to figure out what the real truth is from the situation, and therefore a lot of misinformation is communicated constantly about the situation. The Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op has, from the beginning, been dedicated to trying to bring what's really going on in this situation. In fact, our first article when we first started was December 19th, 2011, about the Voight decision, about the treaty rights that are in question here as well. So I think that the local press, the Ashland Daily Press, was dominated by a pro-miner editor for a long time. She's gone now, and I've seen some more, a little more factual things coming in. But yet, when you run articles by an organization like MacGyver, which is proven to be a front group for ALEC and the Koch Party
brothers,
and such,
yeah.
You get a lot of misinformation about what's going on.
And we have only 15 minutes left. Mike, in the little bit of time that we have, I want to talk about the future. So now that the bill has become law, What are you, what is the Bad River Band going to do? I imagine you are looking at more than one tactic and one way to go about it. What are the plans that you can share with us?
Well, the first thing I'll say, to talk about the future, we need to just make one last comment about the past.
Sure.
It relates to your question earlier, pitting capitalism kind of versus messages about the environment. It also relates to the role the media has played in shaping the dialogue. And what I'm talking about is in the future, we need to start paying attention to the dialogue that is occurring on a statewide level here. What all of us have been lulled into, I think, is concentrating on this notion of jobs versus the environment, but only doing that through a filter of mining, only doing that through a filter of extractive industry, as though somehow that has become, all of a sudden, over the last couple years, the only option that presents itself for economic viability. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that I could speak on too much in terms of ways to sustainably grow economies that respect, you know, the earth and hydrology, you know, waterways and watersheds. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at the state, aside from, you know, organizations and groups and private entities, what kind of leadership has come in the realm of the proactive work to foster discussions and efforts and really coordinated efforts with funding towards renewable energies, towards those types of economic development features that will enhance our home and enhance economies. That hasn't happened. In fact, I think on the flip side of the coin, we've seen a systematic elimination of a lot of these kind of pathways so that all flags point towards mining as some type of, you know, manna from heaven. And that's just fantasy, and extractive industry shows that. We just need to look to our neighbors to see that. Dialogue is going to be key in opening and branching those types of discussions and thoughts is going to be very important in the future. As far as where the rubber meets the road, you know, we along with other environmental groups are analyzing the state law to see if there's litigation that could occur just on the blatant violations of the public trust doctrine, the giveaway of you know, resources. But then there's also the consideration that, you know, the permitting process itself may provide a you know, portal to get into some of that litigative work in the future. As we, you know, prepare, we're looking at a broad range of ways to protect ourselves, everything from treaty rights to delegated federal authority from our treatment as a state, you know, and that comes in the form of water quality standards and air quality standards. We're also looking at organizing, you know, the grassroots activism base that is so critical, and really that whole effort amounts to citizens you know, understanding the issue, and also understanding that part of the issue and maybe most of the issue involves the fact that these things are taking place in their home where they live and spend their time. So there's a lot of efforts going, you know, along those lines. Behind the scenes, you know, there's attorneys at work, there's technical experts at work, there's scientists and biologists and botanists and everybody else mobilizing and analyzing what's coming. And of course, there's no mining permit yet, but you know, again, extractive industry has a history. It has a history of negative impacts and catastrophic changes to you know, water and lands and communities. And we're preparing on all fronts to try and defend ourselves through any type of permitting process that would come down the pike, and it's going to be a long, long journey, and ultimately I think what's really key is for people to continue dialoguing, but to do that through much more than just a filter of extractive industry and mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm. And Kelly, what is the City Council of Ashland thinking of and getting ready to do or doing?
Well, I guess in terms of the mine, there's not, at least at this point, a whole lot that's apparent that we can do. I know that the county government is looking at some of their options in terms of zoning ordinances, but I know that the new law circumvents quite a bit of that. The other communities in this region as well, Bayfield and Washburn have, I know that Washburn's already adopted a very similar resolution, and Bayfield, I believe, is considering one in the coming week. I guess that at this point, it's kind of what Mike said, is building these partnerships, making sure that we're collaborating, that we're sharing information, that we're doing whatever we can to encourage citizens to become more engaged and to, you know, step in and make sure that we are asserting the things, you know, the rights in terms of maintaining the clean air and the clean water that we have. And I can, one of the things that makes me really proud about this region is that, you know, the folks in Madison can pass all the bad legislation they want, but the people here will stand up. This mine is not going to happen. It's not going to happen here. If anything, I should, you know, caution other communities in Wisconsin to start looking at their own backyards, because we're not the only site that they were looking at. So, you know, I guess start where you are and do what you can and keep informed and keep connected to others who are doing the same work.
And it's important to say that this bill, even though it was written specifically for this mine, does open the entire state to mining.
Oh, absolutely. And it has all the same negative consequences for any other community that it has for us.
Right. And Barb, I saw a Facebook post from you. You went to a conference? Or no, you went and saw the We Are Wisconsin film with many teachers or members of the teachers union, and then you asked them basically, or you asked the panelists, I suppose, why you haven't been seeing them in the Capitol when people are there to voice their opposition to the mine. What did they say? How do you think we can get more people out there? Why aren't they there?
They didn't answer the question. And
none of them?
No, I put it up into the panel, and they didn't present it to the panel to
oh,
ask.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I think what's happening in Wisconsin is oftentimes Wisconsin, for whatever reason, does this, is they're on the forefront of change. And this is a worldwide global issue that is going on all over Canada, South America, Africa. The extractive industries are coming to a head. And so we in the North, who are, as Kelly said, we're ready to take this change to the level that it has to be in order to survive the threat to the area and the kind of devastation that would take place and not be able to let us come back is something we're obligated to stand up to do. And I think more and more people around the state are becoming aware, but we started a group called United in Defense of the Water.com, trying to keep all of the activities that are going to be coming ahead and all of the connecting up groups and connecting up individuals, giving educational information, stuff you can do online, steps you can take to help to defend the water all over the state. But for us, Lake Superior is the crosshairs of the water wars.
And we do have a caller and a few minutes left. Caller, if you can be brief, I would appreciate it. Caller?
Hello, is that me?
Yes.
Oh, yes. What to your panel, what type of media blitz are you doing in the Minneapolis and Chicago markets, since those people have summer cabins up in the North Woods?
Mm-hmm.
Because I am sure if you could scare them about property values and the fact that things are going to be destroyed up there, I'm sure you could activate grassroots thoughts with those people in Chicago, Minneapolis?
Yeah, good question. Is anyone doing such a media blitz? Mike?
Well, I'm going to be... I'm going to have the honor of being on a panel next Thursday in Minneapolis, kind of along the lines of the Native movement Idle No More, that that speaks to some of the issues of corporate profit at the expense of communities, people, and environments. That effort is to, you know, talk about the things that we're talking about here in this discussion, and to do that from a treaty rights perspective, and from a perspective of life. And, you know, with that trip to Minneapolis, we'll be meeting with quite a few, you know, persuasive folks from different communities that will be able to kind of expand our network and help us. And our effort, too, for the future does have a cost. And, you know, one of the things that I'm just going to unapologetically mention is the fact that we are fundraising. And we're fundraising to be able to wield the scientific data sets that we have to garner with technical experts and to pay for the attorneys and everybody else that will be involved in you know, formulating our matrix of defense of the Bad River and Lake Superior. And we've created a toggle on the Bad River Tribal website where anyone would be able to donate, to help protect that water, and that will all be organized under a organizational charter that delineates exactly how the monies will be spent in defense of water. That's on our website, but essentially, this whole effort has been to try and just reach people one person at a time, and it's grown. I've watched people wake up, and it's always really, really interesting because, you know, I bump into people that all of a sudden just realize what's at stake and the whole mining issue within this past week even, and they come and they're so excited about ideas on how to help, and it's just, it's really interesting to see, even though some of the ideas may have already been implemented and or tried or are being considered, it's always interesting to watch that reaction and that awakening in folks and communities and groups too. And we're going to continue to try and do that, whether it's Minneapolis, whether it's down in Milwaukee, whether it's in Wausau, Green Bay, and in our own communities too.
So. Yeah. Well, thank you so very much, Mike Wiggins, the chairman of the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa, Kelly Westland, Ashland Council member, and Barbara With, journalist resident of Madeline Island. Thank you very much for joining us, all three of you. I'm Esti Dinur. Thanks to Mark and to Nelly and maybe Lois. I'm not sure. The boys are here, so we're giving the airwaves. Bye-bye.